us. Appreciate it here on a Monday, the Tom and Curly Show. Thank you, Felix, for filling in for Tom. Alrighty, let's see. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I'll test you, see how closely you listen to the show. How many locations does Bucky's Auto Service Centers have?
74.
16. How many years they've been around?
49?
48. Close enough. Trust the man that wears...
Ask the fellow in yellow?
Do
you know what Ask the Fellow in Yellow was from?
That's a shame that you do not listen to the show, but yet you're on the team. All right? It'd be nice. Ursula, trust the man that wears...
The rubber gloves.
All right. Don't say it like that. Weird everybody out. All right. Here we go. Let's
No, that's how you say
it. No. Here we go.
So you don't know what Ask the Fellow in Yellow was from? Okay, I'm not going to tell you then.
Does he sell real estate?
No.
Here we go. The Seattle Homeless Camp. Of course, can't get through an entire show here at Cairo Radio without talking homeless. Yeah, Dory's in London or coming back from London, but still, we'll just do a homeless story for you.
Before he gets back.
There's a group that's a nonprofit, and it receives grants and receives funds from the city and from King County called Share and Wheel. Now, you've heard about this group for a while. They open these camps. They don't ask the people that are homeless to change their behavior in any way. They have, you can be drunk and you can be high, you can shoot drugs, you can drink alcohol within the little camps that are set up and run by Share. Now, they've been in the news recently because, the city has all of a sudden awoken to the fact that they have wasted hundreds of millions of dollars and they're not transitioning anybody from the street to becoming a functioning member of society. And part of the problem seemed to be that Share and Wheel weren't necessarily that active in trying to get these people help. So they Share and Wheel, responded with, we don't have enough money to provide counselors or one-on-one sort of folks to advocate for each homeless person that comes into these crap shacks that we build for everybody.
Yeah, and this is, we're speaking specifically about a tiny house village up in the Licton Springs neighborhood of Seattle. It's been there since April 2017. 53 people live there. One of the statistics that's often cited when they talk about this particular place is that police calls to police were up 62% on the block around where this village was. And the city announced a few weeks ago they were going to shut it down in the spring of 2019. It was being run by Share Wheel, which is a combination of two groups. This is the Seattle Housing Resource Effort and the Women's Housing Equality and Enhancement League.
Uh-huh.
It's made up of mostly former and currently homeless people. So it's sort of a grittier, sort of a frontline activist kind of group, and that's been their reputation all along. They haven't pretended to be a purely social service agency. They certainly have an agenda. And so they announced last day or two, they're pulling out about 5 minutes or 5 months before the whole village shuts down, forcing one of the funders, who also operates some other villages in Seattle, to step in and take over for the next 5 months while this place is shut down.
Okay. I don't fault them, Share and Wheel. They do what they do, and they were able to do what they do because the city didn't really care about metrics at all. As long as it just felt like they were doing something and throwing cash at it, but never determining whether or not they were succeeding. And what is success when it comes to the homeless? Is it just to put them with a roof over their head? Is it allow them to have a tent? Or is it really to be able to get in there and fix the problem, which takes an awful long time? I do a lot of work with Union and Gospel Mission, and they will tell you that, you know, from the time the individual comes to them and agrees to want to be helped, there's a lot of work that has to go into repairing the soul that caused the problem. Most people that are on the streets are self-medicating, drugs and alcohol or whatever, because there's something broken inside them. You've got to fix the broken part before they can become better, and the government is unable to do that.
Well, it'd be an understatement to say it's a complex problem, and it's a mixture of economics and social problems and mental health and drug abuse, all sorts of things, and there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. It does take money, though, I think. It does take real estate, and it takes leadership. And I think we've had varying times. We've had two out of the three things going, but never all three at the same time. And when all three of those things come together, then we'll see a solution, I think, that will actually it won't happen overnight. It'll take months, if not years.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be able to see, hopefully, identifiable progress. The one trick is if you do start to successfully house homeless people or help them evolve and move through whatever the steps are necessary to never be homeless again, how do you not start attracting more homeless people from elsewhere?
Because
I love that, because this is the United States of America. We have fluid borders. You don't need a permit to get into Oregon or get into Washington. It's like, if you want to move here from Florida, by all means, come here. We have a great economy, right?
Yeah.
But how do you take that into account? And my answer for that is, which your libertarian soul will love, make it a federal government problem, because it is. It crosses state borders. Right? Wouldn't that be the best thing to do? So you wouldn't have to worry about people, jurisdictions, fighting petty battles over whether it's King County or Pierce County or Seattle or Bellevue or whatever? Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad you agree with me.
Moving on. Senator Warren from Massachusetts, who defeated Scott Brown. And it was a big deal. Scott Brown ran against her. He had become sort of the last-minute senator that was elected in, what, 2010 or something like that. Anyway, he then debates her. And he brings up, while he's talking to Senator Warren at this first debate, about the fact that somebody, the first question was, is the character of your opponent important? Brown looks at the camera and says, the fact that she claimed to be Native American in order to get into Harvard, and she has reaped the benefits of faking this, no, his words exactly, but generally just calling into question her character. And then Elizabeth Warren had to respond to that. So this thing has been dogging her for a long time. Here is her response to Brown. This is what, 2000, I don't know what.
This is the guy who had the centerfold in Cosmopolitan?
Yeah.
That's right.
Anyway, did you lie about being a Native American?
My mother and dad loved each other very, very much.
Mother and father.
And they wanted to get married. And my father's family said no, because my mother was part Delaware and part Cherokee. And all of our lives, for my three brothers and me, that was a big part of the separation in our families.
Okay, so her mother was part Delaware and part Cherokee, and therefore they couldn't get married. So now Elizabeth Warren has decided, after all of this stuff has been dogging her so long and she wants to be president of the United States, put all this behind you. She takes a DNA test. And what do we learn from the DNA test, Felix?
Well, there's somewhere back in her history, perhaps 6 to 10 generations ago, there is Native American DNA.
So her mom and dad?
Well, here's what this could
mean.
Her
mom?
No, it's 6 to 10 generations ago. And the story, it does, the six generations part does fit with her narrative, which is that her great-great-great-grandmother, O.C. Sarah Smith, who was at least partially Native American, who lived in Oklahoma, that it fits in. I don't think Elizabeth Warren has done herself a lot of favors the way she's dealt with this in the past, because what it was back at Harvard Law School listed her as a Native American to point to how diverse their staff was when she was teaching there. And then when she was at the University of Pennsylvania, back in the 80s, she changed her ethnicity from white to Native American. She says that's now she says that was because matriarchs in her family were passing away, and she wanted to call attention to the fact or somehow memorialize them or pay tribute to the fact that these relatives had passed away and this Native American heritage was slipping away.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it's the other part of the trouble with this is that if you go to the 10 generations part, it means that she could have as little as 1,024th of a fraction of Native American, you know, blood or DNA, so to speak.
Well, listen, if you can claim it and it can benefit you, Snopes has done a piece on it to determine did it help her get the job. Harvard said no.
Yeah.
But whether or not you'd be able to find the literature or at least some something to back that up to say that they didn't look at that. Did she claim it in order to benefit? That's the question. She says that her mom was a part Delaware and Cherokee. That seems not to be true. But here's a new ad out explaining that she took the DNA test.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Warren. Is Dr. Bustamante in, please?
Hi, I'm Carlos Bustamante, and I've advised companies in the direct-to-consumer space, including Ancestry.com, 23andMe, and Helix. In the Senator's genome, we did find 5 segments of Native American ancestry with very high confidence, where we believe the error rate is less than 1 in 1,000.
Now, the president likes to call my mom a liar. What do the facts say?
The facts suggest that you guys
absolutely have a Native American ancestor in your pedigree.
Okay. I don't care much more, but here's 34 more seconds.
I'm not enrolled in a tribe, and only tribes determine tribal citizenship. I understand and respect that distinction, but my family history is my family history.
Who, Pocahontas?
This isn't just about casual racism, war whoops, and tomahawk chops. Native communities have faced discrimination, neglect, and violence for generations. And Trump can say whatever he wants about me. But mocking Native Americans or any group in order to try to get at me, that's not what America stands for.
It's good because he's not doing that. He's just going at you.
I think the low point in all this was when Trump was calling her Pocahontas at that ceremony to honor the code talkers.
Yeah,
that was bad optics. Bad optics there, where you see the guy in the background with the traditional dress and everything. I mean, it's the Native American question. I mean, if I were Native American, I would be angry. I was going to say a bad word. I'd be angry if the Native American discussion is about Elizabeth Warren and Donald Trump. There's so much more story to the Native American story in what's now the United States that's never told anywhere or that's mistold or that is told in such a way that doesn't do anybody any good.
Do you think it's interesting at all that she has decided to answer these charges against her? If you look at Barack Obama as president and when it was Trump who was leading the whole thing on the fact that there was a fake birth certificate, I had seen and read a number of pieces that said Barack Obama actually likes the fact that Trump continued to do this, and he never wanted to truly release the birth certificate to keep that balloon in the air as long as possible, because it made the people on the right seem really extra nutty. So if you're the people on the right aren't getting any traction and more people are not necessarily believing, or it doesn't really matter, but they continue to scream about the same thing, you don't want to give them any reason to stop screaming.
See, and I think with just like with the Obama thing, where even though it was his official birth certificate, there was still a core group of people that refused to believe. And this is even more. I mean, DNA science for the average person is still sort of mystical and voodoo-ish. This isn't like a birth certificate being produced from the Hawaii hospital for Barack Obama. This is just some scientist. And I love the piano, the music playing in the background. I mean, I think this will continue. I don't know if Warren has a chance of being the Democratic nominee in 2020. That's really hard to tell at this point. But
right now, Joe Biden is leading. Hillary Clinton, and there's also some rumor that Hillary might want to run again, and I strongly encourage that. she was asked about... she's doing an interview because they're going on tour, and you get a chance to see Bill and Hillary together on the same stage. A friend of mine does is a speaker, runs a speaker's bureau, and I won't tell you which one, but it's a biggie. I asked him about Bill Clinton's speeches. He said a lot of people hate them because they're very long, very rambling. They don't seem to have any ending or any point at it. He gets that check, gets on that private plane, and flies out of there. Not often recommended now to give speeches.
He used to be so good, though.
Yeah, but now it's just these long ramblers. So I can't imagine what it'd be like with Bill and Hillary on the same stage. But here she is being asked questions now in light of the Me Too movement. Should she have done more or said something to Monica Lewinsky, or should there have been a different way for her to respond to the allegations and then the proven charges that Bill was having an affair with an intern?
What role, if any, did you play in criticizing the character of the women who have accused Bill of sexual misconduct?
None.
None. Role?
No role. I take responsibility for my life and my actions.
She also stood by his side as he was impeached after lying about his affair with a White House intern. Some today have said he should have stepped down.
In retrospect, do you think Bill should have resigned?
Do you think Bill should have resigned? Yes or no? It's a yes or no.
No, I'm embarrassed because I was supportive of Bill Clinton in the 90s, and I wasn't vilifying Monica Lewinsky, but I was supportive of Bill Clinton because I thought he was a great president. He was a great orator, and those were good economic times, and felt like somebody was the president who was smart, who was really smart and articulate.
Is that a yes or no?
I'm kind of squishy on that. I question my own thoughts about that.
Just seen a yes or no. Good God.
No, he should have run for a third term.
No. Just yes or no. Should he have stepped down? Yes or no?
No, he shouldn't have stepped down.
I agree. Right,
okay. In the wake of the Monica Lewinsky scandal?
Absolutely not.
It wasn't an abuse of power?
No.
Yes, it is, but it doesn't matter.
No.
There are people who look at the incidents of the 90s and they say a president of the United States cannot have a consensual relationship with an intern. The power imbalance is too great.
Who was an adult. But let me ask you this. Where's the investigation of the current incumbent against whom numerous allegations have been made and which he dismisses, denies, and ridicules?
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that's already 20 years ago.
Hillary, when the charges came up, she went on the Today Show and talked about the great right-wing conspiracy to come after him. Then also, of course, it was Jim Carville who... close to the Clintons and ran the campaign, said, you know, when you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, you never know what you're going to get, referring to Paula Jones. They went after her.
They called it bimbo eruptions. Remember, that was a term.
Bimbo eruptions, and she referred to Monica Lewinsky as Looney Tunes. So, listen, everybody knew prior to Bill Clinton getting into the White House that he had an appetite for women.
Yep.
She knew that. I think she knew that she was married to a real scoundrel, but I think she would ride the coattails all the way to the White House, and she understood that Bill gets in there, and then eventually Bill serves, then I'll serve, and I'll be able to be leader and president of the United States as well.
So are these quote-unquote better times because at least we're more transparent about who's actually in charge and who's what they do in their free time?
Right. He was able to lower the bars that we will allow the president to have oral sex in the White House now. That's a new standard, and now we have another standard.
Well, not the Oval Office thing is where it was prohibited before. Other parts of the White House, it was probably okay. Going back to the 1812? 1813? Yeah. Okay.
All right, so prior to, after that, yeah, in the White House, okay, but in the Oval Office,
right? That little coat room where it allegedly took place.
Here we go, talking about the fact that Saturday Night Live has a problem because the stuff that's happening in real life is so kooky, it's hard to parody it. And here's a perfect example of it. They did a great job when it came to the Kavanaugh hearings, when you have Matt Damon step in there and play Kavanaugh.
Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant, lots of fun stuff. But when you go and get Donald Trump, and you have Alec Baldwin playing Trump, the problem is that it's just too close. So you can't even find the humor in it because you can't spoof it anymore that it actually seems to be
early on, early in the Trump administration, or maybe when he wasn't even elected president yet, they were out ahead of it. They were proposing things that were so wacky that it was funny. In late 2016 and the first part of 2017, it was pretty funny because it was sort of, oh, wow. But now the novelty's gone, and it's just they're chasing after it. And that's comedy can't chase after something like that.
Wow, that's brilliant. Did you just come up with
that? Just write that down. Comedy can't chase after something
good.
Like that. Okay, good.
The Kanye West and sat down with the president, and then, of course, Saturday Night Live got an opportunity to do a cold open on it.
We've got an amazing lunch to get to, but first I'm sure that Kanye wants to make one or two brief, lucid remarks.
First, let me begin with the idea that time is a myth of infinite amounts of universe, and I'm a prisoner in a different dimension. Have I lost anyone so far? Okay, so I'm going to talk about trap doors. Like, the 13th Amendment is a trap door. And if you're installing a floor, okay, a.k.a. the Constitution, why would you build a trap door where you could end up with the donut bomber?
Oh, this guy might be cuckoo. I mean, I've been in the room with Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un, and they made a lot more sense than him.
And then you start to hear Jim Brown, a great running back number 32 for the Cleveland Browns, sitting there as well, and then he speaks.
Oh, my Lord. What have I gotten myself into?
This is in his head. He's thinking this.
Yeah. I played football with a leather helmet, and my brain is still working better than his.
And when I put this hat on, this hat, it's like Superman's hat.
Superman didn't have a hat, you idiot.
See, the 13th Amendment, you gotta abolish it. The amendment should jump from 12 to 14 like skyscraper elevators, huh?
Can someone be tripolar?
That's the question. Do you think Donald Trump, while sitting there across from Kanye West, was thinking to himself, wow, this guy is out there?
I think this might be one of the few times where he probably was aware of someone other than himself. Yeah. And then that, you know, in that bit, there's some funny lines, and I think you can really Alec Baldwin sounds tired to me. Not in the pre-recorded bits where it's his mind, but where he's opening up, it sounds like he's like fatigue. I'm hearing the fatigue in his voice about doing this Trump impersonation. So
fast break, come back. Tom and Curly Show. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. That's the online Training Academy text line, 98973. You want to come in, it's just three numbers. That's your area code. You can do that or give yourself your own name. Plus, we'll talk about, we come back, Sears decides to close up. We'll share with some great memories of Sears. So, Andrew, get ready to say something about Sears.
Sears?
Good. There you go. That's about all
tears on my tears on my tough skins.
Okay. And we'll talk about why my father used to yell, "Why is the Sears catalog in the bathroom again?" We'll be right back. Here we go. Right to us. This is Peppy. Good job, Andrew. Way to pep it back up again.
Thank you.
All righty. The iconic Sears going away. I worked at Sears for one summer with the number one lawnmower salesman in the country.
Ooh.
I know what you're laughing at.
Rotaries or real types? What were you pushing back then?
He did everything.
Okay.
Bob Sulsky was his name.
Okay.
And should I tell the Bob Sulsky story real fast?
Sure.
Here's how Bob Sulsky did it. He would, before in the break in the morning, we'd go into the break room, and he would write down on his hand with a pen how many lawnmowers he was going to sell before 12. And he would show it to me. And here's how he would do a lawnmower. And just answer honestly. You don't need to try to be funny here. You ready? He'd see you looking at a lawnmower. He'd walk up to you, and he had a pad of paper in his upper pocket. And he would take out a pen. He'd say, "I see you're looking at the Lawnmower 142.
Yeah, good-looking rig.
How big's your yard?
It's quarter acre.
Quarter acre. Where's the house in location to the yard?
It's off to the left on the other side of the driveway by the flower beds.
When the sun rises, does it rise and move across the lawn this way or that way?
That way.
Okay. Do you have any hardscape, like patio or anything like that?
The driveway's not paved, but there's no grass on it.
Would you say there's an incline somewhere on the grass?
Just over on one side, down toward the neighbors.
Would you say that's about 1, 2, or 3% grade?
Oh, probably 1%.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of play structures in the backyard?
No.
Okay, so nothing back there. So this is basically what your house looks like. So here's your house right here. We got the sun coming across. Any shade areas, crabgrass, anything you have trouble growing on?
There's a big tree on the left-hand side there, but and the grass doesn't really grow under there, but I don't
deciduous
care.
Deciduous tree? Is it? We always have leaves on it, or what are we looking at?
That's a pine.
Pine, okay, so fine. So it's always going to be causing some shade. You know what? You're looking at the right lawnmower.
Okay.
And how old is your boy or girl?
Oh, he's 3.
He's 3 years old. Okay, what's his name?
Charlie.
Charlie, okay, you tell Charlie, here's $5 from Bob. You give this to Charlie when he is 10, and you tell him that lawnmower is still going to keep running, and he can cut the grass and make some money, okay? There you go. Hold on a second. You just take this over to customer service, and you give it to them. And the thing that made him the best salesman in the world was he never, ever, ever, ever made a declarative statement.
Yeah.
All he did was ask a series of questions. Anybody's in sales is the most beautiful story in the world.
Yep.
He made a series of questions, and he handed the guy his your yard as drawn out by Bob, and then he gave you $5, and then he wrote your kid's name down. He put his name down, and then you go over to the customer service area, you know, and the guy in the customer service would have a stack of these torn pieces of paper. And then after lunch, Bob would then write down, wash his hands, and write down how many lawnmowers he would sell in the afternoon.
Now, if only Sears had invented an app to capture what this guy used to do, I think we wouldn't be talking about this story this morning, probably.
Well, the thing about Sears, after so many years of having a catalog and then people being able to buy everything, that Sears' thing was, you like, for instance, here's an old ad from, I think, from the, you'll like this because it's an old thing. It's from the 60s.
Like you.
Traffic when you shop almost make you blow your top. Put an end to traffic fears. It's very easy to get to Sears.
Yeah, that's right. Just go to Sears because Sears had absolutely everything.
Oh, it was destination shopping, too. The one that I grew up over Overlake,
yeah,
had a cafe. You could easily spend 3 or 4 hours there as a little kid just wandering around the toy department and stuff.
And now it's gone. CBS's Jill Schlesinger talks about Sears and its unlikely recovery.
This company is struggling under the weight, $4.2 billion of debt. And so even if they were to make some turnaround, they're going to be weighed down by that debt. The problem is that they really are late to the game. If you think about it, Sears is really the heir to Amazon. It should have been Amazon. It was the first catalog company, had all those eyeballs, should have been first online, and like many other companies before it, should have been the innovator, wasn't the innovator.
Yeah, because, you know, they were a catalog company before they had bricks and mortar retail. They did catalog for like 30 or 40 years.
Right.
It wasn't until 1925 that they actually opened stores. So, yeah, you would think that those people who were still running in 1925 would have figured out in 1995, 70 years later, that it was time to get out of the bricks and mortar again, or at least shift things around to take advantage of the fact that the market was changing rapidly.
Whose fault is it?
Eddie Lampert is the owner of Sears, the controller of Sears, has crushed the company into a likely liquidation and broke an American icon company that was unbreakable. Another case of a bad Wall Street guy not understanding Main Street and getting crushed running Main Street retail.
Wow, he's no friend of the
I think he understood how to get all the money out of the store. I don't think it was about Main Street or Wall Street. It was just getting the money out by doing the big share buyback and everything. But I was trying to figure out what this actually means. Sears isn't shutting down completely. They think about half the stores are going to shut down almost immediately, but another couple hundred might be able to be reorganized and reopened. That's really hard to imagine. I just can't see them. Like, what would you go to Sears for other than a bankruptcy sale at this point? You wouldn't go, like, you know, trying to get another the socket that's missing from your Craftsman set or a new fan belt for your riding lawnmower?
It's that iconic catalog coming to our house. I don't know when they would send it to you, but it was something that I would sit down on a Saturday afternoon and I would open the catalog and I would take my scissors out. And I was telling you guys in the pre-show meeting, I got construction paper, red, green construction paper, and I would alternate between red and green, and I would get out my scissors, and I would begin to go through the entire catalog and cut out stuff that I wanted for Christmas. And the front part of the book that I would make was all the stuff that I definitely wanted, like the Doom Buggy and the motorcycle, the mini bike, and the go-kart. That was all the front stuff. And then near the end, I had all these extra pages, And I had glued like one big thing on each page. Then all of a sudden, like the last few were always like the extra stuff. So I'm near back at the end of the catalog. Kind of just now I'm just trying to fill pages.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the wish book they used to call it. They published it from the 30s, I think, to even as recently as 2004. It used to come sometime in September or early October. And it was almost like, I don't know about you, but I hated school. And when summer would end, I'd be really depressed.
Yes.
Then I'd think a few weeks from now, the wish book will be here.
Is that what it was?
Would come, and then I'd be propped up again for a few months anticipating Christmas. Then January comes around. I'm depressed again. Now I can think about school, getting out, and going camping. Because when we went camping, it was the only time my family was allowed to eat like sugary treats, like Pop-Tarts and sugared cereals. And that artificially elevated my depression throughout the summer months. And anyway, it was a sick cycle that went year to year. They only really figured out a couple of years ago.
And the seniors, thanks for sharing that with us, Felix.
That's what I'm here for. I'm on a journey, John.
Spending facts of your life like small change on strangers. That's Tom Waits like. The other thing about the Sears catalog was it was really, you got that and the National Geographic. To tell you what a wasteland it was for anything regarding anything sexual, you would have the National Geographic and you flip through that, you know, nothing that month, right? No.
It was something about those, one of those things they make in Scandinavia where they fill in all the land by like weaving all the wheat together and make like salt dikes or whatever. That was always some dull, like Northern European thing.
There was nothing on that one.
Yeah.
So you'd put the National Geographic away, but then you just thought, well, maybe there's something I missed in the Sears catalog when it came to women's underwear. And that was it in the 60s and 70s. Got you through a very difficult, trying time for everybody. So now that's gone. Forget that. I don't know what kids are going to do now for pornography.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, nothing.
I can't imagine.
Nothing.
Can't imagine.
Yep.
A lot of frustrated kids out there.
Probably a better world, ultimately. Probably.
I think so. And now, you know what? Now that I think about it, I'm glad the catalog is gone because it led to nothing but moral degradation.
It really did. But the catalog knew that less was more, right? There was nothing really sleazy in the Sears catalog, but there was just enough to get you thinking, oh, okay.
Oh, right, there's something underneath that gal, sort of that. You stared at the gal in the girdle long enough. She was looking at you a certain way.
Colored satiny material with those strange hooks and elastics and things holding it all together. God knows what that's all for.
It was her coyness that turned me on. All right, let's see.
You know, I was fond of the Cub Scout shop where you get a little grooming kit with the Cub Scout logo on it with a comb and a nail clipper. Used it, but I like having the extra hardware around.
That's weird. You use that to pleasure yourself?
Collapsible cup? No, I'm talking about Sears.
Oh, right back.
And my tough skins.
All right, let's go. Here we go, the Tom and Curly Show. Tom still dealing with a bad wheel. He's got himself a messed up knee. We'll find out tomorrow what his medical conditions are. Maybe he can send us an x-ray or something. I challenged him a number of months ago. He went in and got a colonoscopy and came out all braggy about how clean his colon was. I said, put your picture up against my picture. Because I got my colon picture. And I said, where's yours? And we'll put them up on the Facebook page and people can vote on whose colon they like better. And then all of a sudden, then where was he? And he backed off that real fast. Hey, look, it's Monday, and already
Jacob's lousy animal story of the week.
Yeah. Wow, that's annoying. That's
bold for a Monday.
24
say.
Years old and already trying to torpedo the number one show here at Cairo Radio for some reason. He likes to do animal stories, and for some reason we let him to keep doing animal stories. And this one comes out of, is it Australia?
It's actually Vienna. It sounds like Australia. It's actually Austria.
Ah, same thing.
Yeah.
And they have a problem with the little rodents that I loved as a kid and often had them as pets. And now apparently they are trying to do everything they can protect the hamster.
Yeah, there's a construction site where there are a big construction project underway. And apparently there's all these burrows and several families and colonies of hamsters. And this guy named Friedrich von Druska, he's a landscaping consultant. He's been appointed, and he's been come to be known as the hamster commissioner because he visits the site several times a week, and they move fences around to protect the burrows, and they're just being very careful to protect these hamsters, which apparently aren't even really threatened anywhere in the world and aren't even threatened in Austria, or even Australia for that matter.
Sorry.
But it's really caught the public's attention because they're taking such care to take care of these hamsters. And it's not like they're the national animal of Austria or anything like that. And my family, we were always gerbil people. Right. Hamsters are kind of the fluffy, soft ones, right? Gerbils have the short hair. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. But the way they describe these are huge. They're 10 inches long and weigh up to a pound.
And they say that you don't want to cuddle them. Although they look adorable, they will fight you like a lion.
Fight you like a bear. They look nice and friendly, von Druska says, but if you get too close, they fight you like a bear.
But they're only 10 inches long and they weigh 1 pound.
Less than a pound. But that's big for a hamster. I think of hamsters being, I think it would sit in your hand.
Right.
That must be something different.
The hamster that we used to have, I forget what they were called, and one time Freddie disappeared. And my mom found him later on living inside my Mighty Mac coat.
Oh.
No. He was fine. He was alive. Yeah. Quite happy. By the way, the only thing I found interesting about the story was the business that the construction company, the executive from the construction company. Did you see the name of the construction company?
I didn't. What was it called?
You ready? B-U-N-D. Can you imagine someone giving you the Gmail address for this? Here. Just shoot us an email at B-U-N-D-E-S-I-M-M-O-B-I-L-E-I-E-N-G-E-S-E-L-L-S-H-C-H-T-E.
You know what they call
it? I'm sorry. Let me get that again.
Bundesmobilengesellschaft.
Yes.
Yeah.
There we go. That's it. They're trying to save as many hamsters as they possibly can.
Yeah, don't
can.
See you fell into the gerbil mistake. I was almost tripped up that way, too. I'm glad you corrected yourself.
You know, just one quick story from my mom. So Freddie disappeared again when we got out of the Mighty Mac jacket. It disappeared, and my mom said, I think he's in the wall behind the sink in the powder room. My mother slept on the cold, hard marble floor of the powder room downstairs. And to catch Freddie when he came out of the wall to eat corn in the middle of the night.
Oh.
And I remember in the morning running downstairs. There's my mom curled up like some sort of political refugee on the floor. And the corn is gone. And I remember yelling at her, the corn's gone. Why did you catch him? So then the next day she built a ramp and a garbage can. And she laid down again on the floor and she had the corn lead past her up the ramp to the top of the garbage can. And on top of that, she had put a washcloth. So Freddie walks up, gets the corn, keeps going, goes all the way up the ramp, and then realizes there's even more corn in the middle of the washcloth and dumped in there, got the corn, and landed down in the bottom of the can.
Wait, I think you're
breaking
confusing,
his neck.
Confusing a family anecdote with a Roadrunner cartoon. Was there an anvil that dropped down when the corn triggered the anvil to fall?
There was a box of Acme dynamite that went off. Are you referring to that? That was to wake my mom up.
I thought so. Yeah,
okay.
I knew there was
no, that's it. That's it. And man, I'll tell you, whenever she wants to bring the guilt bus to the house, she's like, well, how about the time I slept on the floor? I'm sure that helped out with my Parkinson's.